Hello, everyone. Welcome back to another episode of Believe in Bears. My name is Joy Christopoulos with my co-host Corey Wooten. Today's episode is brought to you by BetOnline.ag. And look, it's that time of year again, and all eyes are now turning to football as teams are back on the gridiron to start the football season. And as always, BetOnline is your number one spot for all your pro and college football action this season. Get all the updated odds, props, and contests, including online's biggest $500,000 NFL mega contest, the world's largest $200,000 NFL Survivor contest, open now only at BetOnline. So what do? Go on the website or go on your mobile device right now and sign up today to receive a 100% welcome bonus. Bonus on your first deposit. Take advantage of their opening day super promo make a bet. That's on Thursday, September 9th for the season opener between the Buccaneers and Dallas Cowboys. And if you lose, your wager will be refunded up to $25 for new customers only when signing up with using the promo code NFL100. BetOnline, it's the fastest and easiest way to bet on all of your sports. BetOnline, your online sportsbook experts. Ladies and gentlemen, thank you for coming into this pod. This is a special pod here today because this is an official 2021 Chicago Bears season preview. We are just about a little bit over a week away from the Bears kicking off week one against the Rams. So it's time to bring in my co-host, former defensive Chicago Bears defensive end, and also Believe Podcast Network number one girl dad. It's Corey Wooten. Hello, Corey.
Hey, what's going on, man? I love the intro, man. Got the two daughters, girl, dad, you know, I'm representing.
We were talking about the pre-pod, man. School's back in session. So, I mean, are you a guy that cuts the sandwiches in half? Are you a diagonal guy? How are we playing this here?
You know, my youngest daughter really likes the butterfly cut, so I cut it in half and then put it like butterfly wings. You know, I gotta make sure she's happy. And then my oldest, this year they did something new where they have breakfast and lunch at school. So I said, hey, go ahead. It's one less thing I got to worry about.
That's awesome. I love the culinary style there. All this shapes and sizes is the way to roll. School's back in session, which means the NFL season is back. It is back. What is the, I mean, simple, easy question, Corey. How excited are you, man? And just what are the thoughts running through your mind right now as the Bears are about to kick off in about 8 or 9 days?
Man, there is no time like this, you know, leading up to the season starting next week with that Thursday night game. I mean, it's something we've been waiting for all year. You know, once football season's over, you know, basketball's okay. I watch the finals. It's cool once the playoff hits and the finals, because they play hard. But football season, they play hard every game. That's what you got to love and respect about it. I mean, basketball has so many games. Baseball has so many games. But just the fight every week in and week out with all the teams out there, from the worst team in the league to the best. And I'm excited about the Bears. You know, it's another season for them. Everybody has, you know, expectations and hopes. I don't know if they're as high this year with our quarterback situation right now, but I think people are excited about the season because you never know what may happen, right? That's why they play the games, because of what could happen. So I'm excited to see how the Bears will actually fare this season, offensively, defensively, special teams wise, because predictions, you know, every year everyone has this prediction of what's going to happen. And sometimes it fits in between that prediction, but sometimes, you know, they go above or below what we predicted.
And we're going to be making some predictions right here in this pod, so make sure you listeners stick around to hear that. I completely agree. It's funny, you know, if you got baseball, it's on every single day. It goes on for 6 months. If you miss a game here and there, no big deal. Basketball, sort of kind of the same. You can miss a game on a Tuesday night and make sure you get your fill in on a weekend. And this is something that I'm saying is so obvious, but every year I just remind myself, football, man, when you think about it, you wait those 6 days. And then you wake up that Sunday morning, and then for me, it's about putting on that television and hopefully cheering on my Bears to a victory. And if they get it or they don't, then it's over, and you start all over again, and you just build up that anticipation, and then you have that release. That's what makes the NFL just so unbelievably special. And like you said, you know, the Bears, a lot of opinions right now, a lot of expectations, but I find it ironic that, you know, there's tons of guys on this team that we know, from a Khalil Mack to an Allen Robinson, faces that have been on our team for several years, but there's a little bit of mystery surrounding this team a little bit. I get the sense that not everyone is really 100% sure what this team is going to do out there on the field, which is intriguing, and I think it speaks to some of that talent on that team.
Yeah, I think so. I think we kind of know what they can do defensively. We know what they're capable. I think it's the offense is the question mark, right? We talk about Andy Dalton. That's not everybody's favorite right now. We like to see Justin Fields out there. And then the O-line, you know, we feel good about the guards and the center, but the tackles, you know, Jason Peters, an older guy that's kind of towards the end of his career. This could be possibly his, potentially his last year. And then the right tackle, you know, we got a Fadi out there that's finally healthy. But there's some question marks about him. You know, I know people haven't been completely sold about what they've seen from him, you know, across the last couple of years. So it's going to be interesting to see the offensive side of the football. And I talked about, I think for them to have great success this year, whether it's Fields or Dalton at some point, you know, we have to figure out the running game. That's what's got to be clicking on all cylinders, right? And you know, I think you got to be a run first team, especially with the defense the way it is. And just to give whatever quarterbacks out there confidence, I think Montgomery, you got to give him the rock early and often. He's got to lead the league in carries, in my opinion, if the Bears are going to have a successful season.
You guys, you're going to take us into the locker room, kind of get us a sense of how team, you know, players right now are preparing for the season coming up. I do want to ask you really quick. We haven't spent a ton of time. We've done a couple episodes here on this pod, but we haven't done a ton of time on Andy Dalton, and you just brought him up. We can talk all day long about completion percentage or touchdowns to interception ratio and all that. But from someone who played the game, who's in the NFL, for Andy Dalton, and we're going to do game install next week with matchups with the Rams and everything, but what are like some specific things or maybe some keys for Andy Dalton that you think he can employ or you want to see week one that can make him a successful quarterback, you know, for the time being while he holds the starting quarterback mantle?
Yeah, I want to see him take command of the offense, right? We know he's a great leader out there. I want to see him take command of the offense and have confidence. That's the biggest thing, because at times in his career, I felt like he kind of struggled with confidence. And I think that's a big key when you talk about quarterbacks playing well, is carrying that confidence out in your playing ability. And you saw it at times where it kind of wavered, especially when he got hit a lot. You know, I think about some games when J.J. Watt was playing against him and they were going at it, the Red Rider comment and all that. When he gets hit, he gets flustered. And that's what I've seen over his career. And you talk about the question marks at the tackle position. This could be a situation where early on he's getting hit a lot. So how is he going to fare against that? And that's why I'm hoping they can game plan around it, really get that running game going, some chip help, you know, with the tackles and until they shore things up. So the confidence, that's what I want to see from him. You know, if he gets hit, get up and get back at it. You know, it's something that over his career I've kind of seen. When he gets hit, that's when he struggles.
Yeah, when I think of veteran quarterbacks, obviously the first one is protect the football. The second one I think is what you're kind of leading towards is with that running game, sell that play action. And when you do play action, make it count, especially exactly. If you're a veteran like Andy Dalton. And then the third one is maybe something that I'm overthinking or overcompensating with, and I want to ask you, as a veteran, is there maybe, I don't know, a huge advantage. Is there a tiny advantage with Andy Dalton under center with this kind of ramshackled offensive line to get his guys lined up? You know, I know the center's kind of in charge of what establishing the mic and stuff like that, but can Andy help with that pre-snap motion, get people lined up, keep them out of bad plays and bad situations?
For sure. You know, he's a guy that is a smart guy. He, like I said, he's a leader. He can take command of an offense, right? And Jason Peters just getting acclimated into this offense is kind of might be unsure of certain protections and slides. And, you know, Andy's going to be talking with him right away, where Justin Fields, I kind of don't know if he would have been ready, you know, to be able to focus on, you know, every piece of everything before the play, all the pre-snap stuff. So a guy like Andy is like, okay, I feel comfortable being a dude. I've been around the block before. I've done this, you know, I played in games. So that's something that he definitely has an advantage of over Justin Fields. But, you know, the fans want Justin Fields. I mean, you see it all over Twitter. I mean, you and I both, we want Justin Fields out there, right? And that's the hardest part for me, I think, to understand is – I think so coaches nowadays get so caught up in worrying about the psyche of a quarterback. And if you're worried about a guy that if he has a bad game or a couple bad games, if he's just going to go in the tank and never be the same, then why did you draft him? Right. Yeah. If you're so worried about them, but you know, you've done enough due diligence through his college career, his interviews, you've seen, you know, him go against Clemson, against Trevor Lawrence and put up numbers against him and look like the better quarterback out there. So I just don't understand that. If like I said from the beginning, he's your guy, you trade up for him, you can cater this offense. Like, you've seen what Kansas City's offense been with Patrick Mahomes. And I'm not saying Justin Fields is Patrick Mahomes yet. He could potentially be there one day. We don't know. But I think he's an athletic quarterback that can do it all. And you just game plan the offense around him, right? You script for success, just like with Russell Wilson, right? He was a young guy that played early, and they catered around him. He had a great rookie season, right? He didn't look out of place at times, you know, when they pressured him and did this. But it's a learning experience. And to get growth and learning and maturity out there, you have to play. So, yeah, I get it about the O-line situation and all that, but you could always have chip help. You could always, you know, do boots, rollouts, stuff to protect your offensive line. So, yeah, Andy Dalton's the guy, and we have to accept it. But, yeah, I kind of wish they would have went with Fields right away.
And something that I want to also point out that I think you're hitting on with Justin Fields, Rex Grossman, for example, he'd throw three picks in a game, and it really would kind of – it would rattle him. It would mess with his accuracy. He would even do stuff where he would just kind of throw it into three – you know, into traffic, into three defenders, and just hope to God they would make a reception. Jay, I felt like at times there was a body language issue a little bit, where if Jay wasn't having a good game, it just kind of wasn't working out. It wasn't going to turn around. And, you know, I thought Jay was a productive player, but that's just my opinion. And the same thing with Mitch, where I kind of felt like Mitch had a little bit of that shake it off mentality. But as you saw in 2019, you know, when he got benched in that Rams game, I think stuff really started to cave in on him and he began to lose his confidence. All I'm trying to say is, with Justin Fields, I feel like he's just got this cool baseline. This, you know, I'm playing this game whether it's incomplete or complete. And I'm telling you right now, that is what Chicago Bears fans want. We want to see you. It's not that we want to see you fail, but if you fail, we want to see you stand right back up, get out there, and keep trying as if nothing went wrong. You know what I mean? Dust the dirt off. You know, the whole act like you've been here before with the touchdown stuff. That's Chicago Bears mentality. And I think he actually has like that type of intangible that could honestly really help him.
I think so too. So what do you think about the point I was getting at with teams are so concerned about the psyche of a quarterback? We don't want to we don't want to break him. We don't want to. Do you think this is something that they're being too cautious? Like, because any other position they would let play out there week one, you know, first round offensive tackle, first round defensive end, cornerback, whatever. They'd be out there day one, you know. But with the quarterback, they just seem like very cautious about stuff. Like, and I talked about the example with Jared Goff, right? He sits out the whole season until like the last 2 weeks and they play him because they're so bad it doesn't even matter. What do you think about that?
I love that you're throwing this at me, because as you mentioned, there's a lot of different examples from different NFL teams, right, of how they go about their business. So I want to talk specifically about what I think Matt Nagy and the Chicago Bears are thinking. And I think that a very long time ago, probably the night before they drafted Justin Fields, because they already had Andy Dalton, they said to themselves, you know what, we are going to put this plan in place. And they drew it up on some sort of, you know, grease board or whatever. And they said, you know, we're going to bring him along slowly and Andy's going to be our starter and we're going to see how it goes. Justin Fields could throw 450 touchdowns to zero interceptions in training camp and 11 on 11s. And this is our plan. Compliment, you could say, loyalty, you could say discipline. The other side is you can definitely criticize that and say, what's the point of evaluation? What's the point of going out there every single day? And we've talked about it before, about the meritocracy inside of a locker room of the best guy. Who gives you the best chance to win? Again, how excited are we to watch football on Sundays? You only get 17 of these bad boys, right? Everyone is sacred. And as you've mentioned on previous pods, everyone's out there giving 110% to make a name for themselves and take care of not just business for their team, but take care of business for their family. So it just sort of seems like Nagy looks himself in the mirror every night and he goes, I'm doing the right thing. I'm disciplined. This is discipline. This is discipline. And they're going to sort of see how it goes. I think he plays week one. I think week two, I think that Dalton definitely plays. And then after that, I think it turns into a quarter-by-quarter basis. Let me ask you, I'm going to throw this back at you. Do you think at this point, is it possible at all that Matt Nagy and this team right now are scheming up a way to have Justin Fields play a snap or two, a series, or maybe some sort of look in a red zone week one, and we the little surprise?
I think so. I think that's how you do it, you know, especially if no one's expecting Andy Dalton to light it up, right? Fair to say. I think they're expecting him to manage a game, make some completions here and there, but I don't think they're expecting him to be a Pro Bowl caliber, you know, leading the league in passing yards, efficiency, et cetera. I think they're expecting him to be a game manager. That's probably what they've fed him. But I'm hoping if maybe they could bring Justin Fields in some kind of slash role like Cordell Stewart back in the day, right? One of our favorites to watch, you know, number 10 on the Steelers, you know, we used to play Madden. He could do it all, you know, 99 speed, et cetera. So if they could do something like that, put him not in like a situation like a, you know, wide receiver or something, but if they could have some quarterback design runs, you know, kind of like that
RPO with Montgomery. Yeah. Next team, and are we snapping to Montgomery? Or are we snapping to Fields?
Yeah, exactly. You kind of get the defense thinking, and just Justin Fields being out there, that's a different element, right? And even in a situation where you have Andy Dalton out there, and then you possibly put Justin Fields in a receiver role just for a play, just to mess with them. You don't even throw him the ball, but it's a situation where, like, they're always thinking, oh, what if they throw it to him? And then he throws it deep across, you know, to Marquise Goodwin, you know, who they just signed, one of the fastest guys in the league, or Allen Robinson, right?
Wait, yeah, real quick, I'm having fun with this. So if you were on the Rams, you're on the defensive line, it's first and goal on the 6-yard line, and Justin Fields comes in. In your head, are you saying they're going to RPO him to run, or – are you right?
100%. If I'm the defensive end in that situation, yes. And I know, and he can outrun 100% of the DNs in the league. There's nobody that can run with him. I'm sorry. There's fast guys out there, but there's nobody that can run with him. So when he's out there, right, and he acts like he's going to hand the ball off, right, they're going to go right to the outside because they know it. And what is that going to do? Open up the running game for Montgomery. Yep. Touchdown, right? So this is something that maybe, you know, Dalton is your guy, but you bring him in, right? You slowly, you know, get him in there in a situation where you're like, okay, he's running the RPOs good. Okay. Oh, he's just – defenses think, oh, he's just going to run the ball when he's in there, right? Play action. Whoop. And then a situation where like, oh, he's doing really good at this. Andy Dalton, you're not our guy anymore, right?
Oh, well, and on top of that too is what's been the Chicago Bears offense's problem the last couple of years is breaking their own tendencies.
Exactly.
Figures it out, and all of a sudden you can't run the ball anymore, and you're just in shotgun with Nick Foles, and he's dropping back and trying to do the best he can with an offensive line or whatever, and everyone become one-dimensional.
Yep. Nope.
Kind of create something a little different there.
The one thing I hope they don't do, and we talked about this a little bit, is on third and short or fourth and short, please do not do any kind of sweep. You know, sideline to sideline running play, put two tight ends there, like we said, Akeem Hicks at fullback, whatever, and lead the way and give it to David Montgomery. Because if I see that play one more time, I'm going to throw something at the television screen because it makes me so angry. Like, come on, you're going 4 yards that way, 5 yards behind the ball to get 1 yard. Okay, so I just don't understand that. Like, I'm trying to be too cute at times. Like,
I hate to say this, dude, but I'm going to have to cut this portion out, and I might have to bring it back into future pods because we know he's not going to be able to help himself.
Exactly.
You're in Kansas City. That's the barbecue capital of the world. Now you're in Chicago, the city of broad shoulders. Get out of here with this CFL stuff and give me a little north south. And just, you know, if you don't get it, then all right, whatever. But that, you know, it's about putting your best foot forward and just saying, hitting this yard.
Yeah. Barbecue place, you know, it's like ordering some kind of vegan sausage at a barbecue place, right? You get brisket or pulled pork or some ribs, okay? That's what was happening on those third and fourth and short. Can I get a vegan? No. Give me some brisket downhill, right? Come on, man.
Anyways, today's episode is also brought to you by Play Action because, look, this is exciting news. Bet on Chicago is partnering with PlayActionPools.com this season to bring you some interactive fun to the sport we love most. You'll be able to get in on all the action with our PlayActionPools.com Football Pick'em Challenge, which is open to everyone. So here's how it works. You sign up for our contest, Believe Football Pick'em at PlayActionPools.com, and then get your picks in each week. We're going to select the 10 highest profile games of the week between NFL and college football. Whoever gets the most picks correct each week will win a pair of electric sunglasses and a pair of DC shoes. So again, go to PlayActionPools.com and sign up for the contest, Believe, B-L-E-A-V, Football Pick'em. And if you plan on hosting your own football contest, go to PlayActionPools.com today. They've got Survivor Pick'em, as well as a cool sportsbook style concept called Build Your Own Bankroll. That's only at PlayActionPools.com, your new home for all your office sports picks. Now, back to the pod. I do want to ask you, I want to take the listeners inside the locker room real quick. We're talking briefly about it on pre-pod. Let's start first with, we're going to go on two sides. We're going to start on the veteran side, and then we're going to go on, you know, the young and up-and-comer side. But you mentioned on the pre-pod, Akiem Hicks. Yep. Kind of walk us through right now, a guy who's a veteran, 33 years old, knows how to get himself ready, but kind of walk us through, what's his preparation point right now, 8 or 9 days away from week one? You know, what's his mindset right now?
So he's a guy that's established himself in the league, and I talked to you off camera about the difference between this, right? A guy, Akiem Hicks, established himself. Coaches know what he can do. He knows what he can do, and he's been doing this. He's been starting for a while, so he knows how to get himself ready, right? He's been limited in the preseason and practices, et cetera. And I talked about this. Guys like him, Khalil Mack and company, and guys that have been starters in this league, they just have to get themselves ready for this week one. And the coaches know that they get ready every year, whether or not they're practicing every day, whether or not they know they turn on a switch coming this week in the preparation this week and next week for the game. So he's doing everything, you know, getting his body ready, eating, nutrition, just getting in that mindset, because the preseason is a different mindset, right? It's for the guys that are established, it's just being healthy for week one. So he knows what he needs to do. And he talked about a guy like Gibson, right? You know, a guy on the defensive line, this younger guy. He's somebody that he wants to get in the rotation, right? And he showed well during preseason. He's done a great job. So he's kind of getting in that situation, like, how big is my role, right? Hopefully I've done enough from preseason to show them that I could be a rotational guy. I can play a lot. They have trust in me and confidence as going into his second year. So he is like, hey, every practice, every, you know, situation in the film study, coach asks me a question, I have to know what's going on. I got to know what Akiem Hicks is doing. I got to know what Eddie Goldman's doing. I got to know what the linebackers are doing, safeties. So it's just being aware of everything, because he's trying to earn their trust. And in a defensive line, you want a great rotation. You know, a guy like Mario Edwards is going to be out for two games. So it'd be big for him to step up if the coaches trust him enough. And it would give guys rest like Khalil Mack and Robert Quinn, you know, because you want that rotation. Because the problem a lot of times in the league, and you see this, and you could probably attest to this if you watch a game and really focus on it, a lot of times teams don't rotate enough, especially in the end and tackle positions, and guys are out there tired. And the thing is, right, you can be out there and you can be functioning, you can play the run well, but when it comes to pass rushing, I mean, that's what makes the difference between a, you know, college lineman and a pro lineman, right, is the emphasis on pass rush, right? And if you're tired, you can't give 100% against, you know, a great guard or a great center or a great tackle. So it's all about getting that rotation. And I think if they have a great rotation this year, which I believe they have the pieces too, I think they can keep those guys healthy and fresh, and their sack numbers will be up, you know, because a guy like Akiem Hicks, I think he should be a 10 sack guy, right? And I think at times there hasn't been people to spell him out, you know, and I'm hoping this year they'll be able to give him some more rest, because, hey, when you're 330, I mean, you can only go hard so many plays. I mean, that's just how it is. Like, people don't realize how tiring it is. You're pushing against somebody that's 330, 315 every play, and then you're running to the football, you're trying to pass rush, it is hard taking on double teams. So just keeping them fresh.
Yeah, those 12 play drives and all that stuff. We're on the exact same page, because my very next question for you was, if you're a guy like Gibson and you've been in his shoes before, you know, young linemen coming up, of course they're going to have rotations. And I don't want to say that anyone's not in shape. Akiem Hicks, Khalil Mack, these guys are ready to play football. I just don't think your body is naturally ready to do those four quarters probably right off the bat. So if you're a guy like Gibson, are you looking at it like, are you looking at the second quarter? Or are you kind of more looking at that third quarter of being like, you know, these guys might need to get a little bit of a blow just because it's week one, you know, by week two, week three, they're ready to go all the time. Are you kind of looking in that area of being like, hey, this is when I need to step up?
So I think the biggest thing is, you know, I play with Rod Marinelli, you know, who's now, I think, for the Raiders. I think he's the defensive line coach and coordinator. So he was a guy that was our coordinator and our defensive line coach. And he always just preached the importance of keeping guys fresh early. So he would give guys like six plays, get them out, right? And then, you know, if there was a situation where it was a hurry up, you know, obviously we couldn't do that. But he's like, listen, when the game matters, I want my aces in there, right? So I was a guy in 2012. I started off the season as the rotational guy. So I would come in for Izzy Adonijay and Julius Peppers, right? And then I worked my way into the starting lineup just because I proved to him that, hey, I could get, you know, 40 snaps a game off the bench and be just as productive as a starter. So this is an opportunity for a guy like Gibson. If they rotate him early and often, you know, to be able to think about that. You have, you know, 5-6 guys on the defensive line that can all give you sacks at any point in time, right? You know, Mario Edwards when he gets back, Gibson, Khalil Mack, Robert Quinn, Akeem Hicks, Eddie Goldman inside. That is a pretty good rotation in there if they could keep those guys fresh. And it's dangerous. In 2012, we had one of our best seasons. Defensive seasons in Chicago Bears history. We had that rotation, myself, Izzy Adonijay, Julius Peppers, Henry Melton, Stephen Paya, you know, guys like that. And, you know, it was something that, like, we just kept each other fresh. And, you know, I was able to move inside. Izzy was able to move inside. And we kind of just all rotated in there. And it kept us fresh. It kept us rushing the passer. Because in this league, comes out quick. 1-2, balls out. That's what our coach always said. So you got to win quick. You got to stay fresh.
You got me thinking too, you know, Henry Melton, Tommy Harris, the return of Eddie Goldman.
Exactly.
All reports were thumbs up after that final preseason game. Just real quick, what do you think he's going to do to that rotation and maybe as that partner with Hicks in the middle?
Oh, it's huge. I think he's you know, one of the most talented nose tackles in the game. And he's a guy that's kind of been banged up, you know, on and off the past couple of seasons. And that's what we talked about, just getting him healthy. And we saw him in that last preseason game. He looked good moving around. And it's just about getting those reps. We know what he can do. But him and Hicks over there inside, I mean, that is a deadly combination in there. And I think if he stays healthy this year, this could be a true breakout season for him, you know, with the, you know, tackle numbers, sack numbers, pressure numbers, because all the attention is on there. Akeem Hicks, that dude is an absolute, he is literally a grizzly bear out there. I mean, people are scared of him out there and they command a lot of attention on him. It's surprising to see so many guys on, you know, third down situations getting double teamed. It's usually the ends that get double teamed, but he's a guy inside that gets double teamed. There's so much attention. He's triple teamed at times. I mean, it's just unbelievable to see the type of respect he commands. So I'm hoping this front seven, and I talked about, for this team to really have a successful season, it starts with that front four for sure. I think those guys, if they can do what I think they're going to do this season, I think defensively they can be successful. And the rushing cover, that works together, right? If they're rushing well, they're pressuring, they're getting sacks. You're causing errant throws, that's going to lead to interceptions. A lot of, you know, three and outs, et cetera. So that's how you win in this league. And it starts with the defensive line. I think every team that's been a dominant defensive team, it starts with that front four and front seven.
And for everyone that today is, you know, reading the articles about the situation going on with the Bears secondary in terms of having to move on from Trufant, which is just kind of, a tough situation. You know what I mean? He's going through something with his family right now. Just can't be out there on the field. They did re-sign Artie Burns, and it looks like it's going to be Kendall Vildor kind of in that mix right now. But if you get that front seven going, maybe they can kind of work through some of those issues a little bit quicker and kind of can solidify that unit moving forward. Let's take a quick break to talk about our sponsor, Balance 7. So I don't know if you've heard, but apparently former NBA player Lamar Odom may be returning to professional basketball in Spain soon. He's been taking a new product he owes the credit to. It's called Balance 7. Balance 7 is a pH balancing alkaline supplement drink, and look, for anyone in their 30s and above, or maybe even before. Look, I'm 37, but even in my 20s, every day was a maintenance day. I could use a little something like Balance 7 for a little bit of help. So head to balance7.com and use the code BLEAV, believe, for free shipping. Balance7.com. Use the code BLEAV for free shipping. I did. And if it worked for Lamar Odom, it can work for you too. Now back to the pod. I do want to ask you, let's start talking about the season a little bit. I was looking up the schedule. So if I'm wrong, Bears fans, comment or whatever, question, whatever you want. They don't play two road games in a row or two home games in a row.
Yeah, because you're right.
Home,
yeah.
Home away, home away, home away all season. I can't remember the last time that's ever happened. Corey, is that a good thing? Is that a bad thing? You know, what does that mean as a player?
You know, I think obviously anytime you play at Soldier Field, that's an advantage, right? Just because your home crowd, they get rocking. And I think, you know, a lot of complaints, and this is a real thing. People complain about the field, Soldier Field. It's like a thing every year. You know, it's the worst field in the league. Oh, my footing is this and that.
I play dumb.
Right. And it's a thing, like, obviously it's an advantage for, you know, the Bears players, because you played in it, you know how it does, but you know, the teams that have a lot of speed and, you know, can, you know, have guys that are really shifty, they hate it because they think it's, you know, it's an uneven surface and it's a disadvantage for them. But yeah, I guess the biggest thing is just how much confidence you have. Right. And if you keep stacking wins, I don't think it matters whether you're home or away. I think just the confidence you bring in. And I think this is going to be a defensive ball club, like I talked about. So if they can be at opposing stadiums and get those three and outs and keep the score low, it's a lot easier to play on the road. You know, when things aren't going your way and the home team is rocking, the crowd gets into it. And then offensively for the Bears playing away, that's hard. You know, when the crowd noise is up, then we talk about the offensive line situation and they're trying to see, you know, and the tap, you know, the silent count. And then that's a whole nother beast, you know. So I look at some of these stadiums and that does concern me a little bit, but I'm hoping the defense keeps things at bay. And then that crowd won't be into it as much.
There's no way to slice it. The road schedule is tough this year. The road games are the Rams, the Browns, the Raiders, the Buccaneers, the Steelers Monday Night Football, the Lions on Turkey Day, the Packers on Sunday Night Football, at Seahawks, at Vikings. That's not easy, Corey. That's not easy. But here, you know what? When you start looking at the home schedule and what you're talking about a little bit, and if this team can be that defensive ball club and take care of business at home, you might be looking at a little bit of a more successful season than you want to believe. Home schedule: Bengals, Lions, Packers, 49ers, Ravens, Cardinals in December, Vikings, Giants.
I like the home schedule.
The home schedule I can wrap my head around, and I'm an optimist, but I can kind of wrap my head around a 6-2 at home. I could see
that for sure. I think most of their wins are going to be at home. I think the road schedule is tough. You know, you look at Seattle. I mean, that's a hard place to play. I don't care how bad the O-line is playing for Seattle or this. I mean, they always find a way to get it done. That 12th man is no joke. You know, so it's going to be hard, you know, because all these teams that, you know, you're talking about, they're playing on the road, are all teams that they're predicting to be very well this year, to do well. And, you know, the Browns, that's a scary team, honestly. I think they're gonna do some damage this year. You look at offensively, defensively, special teams. I mean, they have weapons. And I think this is a year that they could possibly go, you know, all the way.
The thing about the Browns that I'm looking at is that it's week three. We could, in theory, catch them early. The old sports cliche of catch them early before they start figuring out their stuff.
Now, I don't know, man. I just think, you know, they have a couple years of experience with each other, and Odell Beckham is back. I mean, you see the way he looks recovering from that. I mean, yeah. Oh, man, just the weapons they have. You know, Landry, him, Njoku, Chubb. I mean, and then defensively, they got Clowney opposite Garrett. Gosh. You talk about that matchup, especially against two tackles that we're a little unsure of right now. So that is a pretty scary combination.
Yeah, no, and they're the type of team that, like, can have that demoralizing factor, right? They got that strong front. They got a two-headed monster in the backfield. And, oh, yeah, Odell Beckham gashing you every once in a while. You're just like, well, what do I gotta do? But, Corey, this is the first time all season I'm pulling out my Believe Podcast turd shining kit. Where, you know, maybe, like, we shine a couple of turds here. You know, maybe it's early for the Browns. You can take care of business against the Raiders. We played the Buccaneers tough last year. Who knows if the Steelers are healthy? Lions on Turkey Day. Come on, that's a W. Yeah. Packers on Sunday Night Football. I'm never going to wrap my head around that. And then, yeah, man, that Seahawks game is going to be tough because they're definitely going to be fighting for a playoff spot. So I think it's time, Corey. You don't have to do a win total if you don't want to. Some people aren't into that.
I'll do it. I got to prepare.
Mm-hmm. All right, cool. Because I got in a lot of trouble last year picking game scores because they got in that 6-game losing streak, and I started doing the thing of, like, they're going to win this week, and then after four losses, I was just like, forget it. Like, this isn't going to work out. But yeah, give us a win loss prediction, and probably from there we can figure out whether you think the Chicago Bears team is making the playoffs in 2021.
I think they're going to finish. I'm going to say 9-8. You know, I think that's a fair prediction. You know, I think they're going to look really well in certain games, but like we said, some of those games, the Browns, that kind of scares me. The Packers, they really don't fare too well. And Aaron Rodgers is in a year where he's really trying to prove himself with everything that's been going on in Green Bay. He's like, hey, I'm worth all this money and all this talk and everything that's been going on. And then you talk about the Steelers, you know, Big Ben towards the end of his career, he really wants to make a statement. You know, then you go to Seattle at 12th man, Russell Wilson. He really wants to make a statement that he thinks he's the best quarterback in the league, right? Because we know Tom Brady's up there, and then everyone says Aaron Rodgers, right? But Russell Wilson, he's trying to make that statement, because I feel like he is definitely one of the underrated quarterbacks in the league. Everybody that talks about him, but they never consider him one of the best in the league. You know, like, oh, he's playing really well. He's been playing good the past couple weeks, but he's not one of the best. But I think he is. I think he's up there, you know, top three for sure. But people don't give him enough credit, I think. And it might be something just playing on the West Coast all the way in Seattle. You know, you don't get as much coverage as a team, you know, like the Bears or New York Giants or Bucks now that Tom Brady's over there.
And to be fair, I just don't feel like he's ever put together a top to bottom amazing season that I think would probably bring him into that echelon. Mm-hmm. Like last year, it was the first, I think, five or six games. He was the best player in the NFL, and then somewhere along the way, you know, injuries and stuff like that happened. Their offense began to sputter a little bit, and I think the year before it was almost like flipped. You know what I mean?
Yeah, exactly.
A little tough. So yeah, 9-8. I'm with you, man. I gotta be honest. All week long, the number in my head was 7.
Okay.
7. And here's the thing that is my biggest concern right now. And it has nothing to do with the players on either side of the ball, but typically when you have something that is in flux like our offense, and we know what our offense has looked like the last couple of years, and it's even more now new pieces trying to figure everything out, I'm always asking myself when I walk into Sunday, do we have a tactical advantage against the opponent? And that's my biggest concern, is when these things are a little bit uneven or unsure, we're trying to figure stuff out, can Matt Nagy scheme and coach up a way to give us a tactical advantage? I actually got high hopes for Sean Desai. I think some of that stuff, and I'm hoping that pre-snap, I've heard stories about Vic Fangio's pre-snap switcheroo. He'll give you a look and then disguise you and do something completely different after snap. I think Sean Desai is going to get back to that. That's going to help us out a lot. But when you're going, you're saying Matt Nagy versus Sean McVay, Matt Nagy versus Kevin Stefanski, Matt Nagy versus Matt LaFleur, Bruce Arians, Kyle Shanahan,
it's tough.
Mike Tomlin, John Harbaugh, Pete Carroll, I'm kind of looking at it and I'm asking myself the question. Here's what I'll say. When I pulled up the schedule and I went through it win by win, I actually thought it was like more of an 8-9, 9-8 season.
Yeah.
Because I have a lot of faith in the Vikings. Yeah. I actually think the Bears should beat the Vikings twice and the Lions twice this year.
That's what I have projected too. I think those are gimme games because they always play them well. They have their number.
Yep.
I just think those are, but the Packers, I'm hoping they split that one. But usually, just the way Aaron Rodgers plays, I mean, it's just hard for the Bears to beat him. I mean, it's kind of like that thing with Brett Favre, like he just always beat the Bears, and people hated him for it. You know, same thing, they hate Aaron Rodgers because he always plays well against the Bears, you know?
Yeah, and so if you got those four games right there against the NFC North, you take care of business with the Bengals, the Raiders, and the Giants that already has you at 7.
Yeah, that's what I had as well. So I think, you know, the Niners, that's going to be a tough game. You know, I think that's going to be a tough one over there. You know, Jimmy Garoppolo has had a good preseason. You know, they're kind of in a similar situation. I think Garoppolo, I think he's more talented than Dalton at this stage in the game, but they have a young guy behind them that they eventually want to get in there. So it's very similar. I think they just play really well out there, and that's going to be a tough one. And I think the Cardinals game, I think that's going to be a win at home because I think Arizona doesn't play well, you know, late in the season in the cold weather places. Hopefully it's frigid. Hopefully it's freezing. That breeze off there. You know, guys aren't wanting to play. It's a different animal when you get to Soldier Field when it's cold, because I played a game back in 2012, or no, it was 2013, we played the Cowboys on Monday Night Football, and it was ice cold.
The McCown game.
Exactly.
Yeah. Yep.
Exactly. It was freezing out. And I remember I hit Jason Witten on one of those plays where it was like a Y off and they come and kick you out. And he came and hit me and he's like, oh man, it is so cold. I remember just laughing. Because I'm like, man, this dude used to playing, you know, in the dome and all that. And he's like, man, I've never been so cold in my life. It's just funny. You know, the bet guys, they'll admit when, you know, they're cold or, you know, they're being soft or whatever. It's funny. You know, guys like him and Antonio Gates, you know, they'd be like, dang, man, you big as hell, man. I don't even want to block you, man. It's all right, man. My coach don't care. You know, stuff like that. So veteran tight ends, man, are the funniest, honestly.
You think the funniest is if you could pick one. You threw two out just now, but
so okay. So I'm gonna tell you the funniest player that I ever played against, Andrew Luck, and I'm sure you've heard these stories. So back in
his voice to start with,
yeah. So back in 2012, you know, I hit him twice and I sacked him, and after both hits and the sack, he was like, "Oh, great hit, yo, that was great. You really got me on that one, like." And that's what he was known for. Like, somebody hits him and he says, great hit, great job. And people thought it was just getting somebody's head, like, oh, you know, you're not really affecting me, you know, to mess with you. But he was just a nice guy, like probably one of the nicest guys in the world. And, you know, I always tell everybody that story. I'm like, yeah, I hit him, I sacked him. And he was like, oh, great hit. Yeah. Great job, man. You do a great job. Yeah, exactly. So he's a great guy. I think he's just probably like one of the nicest people that probably ever played in the NFL. He's just not a bad bone in his body, not a mean bone in his body. He's just Andrew Luck, you know, Captain Andrew Luck.
Yeah, and he got out of the game upright too. Like, give the dude, I mean, because he was heading towards that area, I think, in his career where some of the injuries, we could say whatever we want, but the dude was a tough football player. I remember, by the way, that 2013 game against the Cowboys, in my opinion, the greatest offensive game in Chicago Bears history that I've ever watched in my lifetime.
They did a great job there.
No business being there.
Exactly. But hey, you know, that was a unique situation. That the last game of the season against Green Bay and the blown coverage, and we got a chance to make the playoffs, and I got held like crazy, and they didn't call it on that play. You know, we somebody sent a picture to me on Twitter after that play. Was it TJ Lang from the Packers? You know, a guy who I played in college in the league. Man, he held the crap out of me on that play. So that's something I'm like, come on, man. You know, but he's like, man, it ain't holding unless they call it. And I'm like, man, forget you, man.
My favorite punch down to Packers offensive lineman is it just looks like they never shower. And if you can confirm or deny that for me, that'd be great. Their hair just looks like it's not conditioned.
Yeah. I don't know. Bakhtiari, he looks like he could probably have an endorsement for a Head and Shoulders or something. You know, he's got that silky smooth hair, man. He's always got a slick back.
Him and Troy. Let's get to our final section here. This is kind of another one where we're just kind of putting our name on some stuff real quick. A bit of a lightning round. We're calling this unders, thanks to our sponsor, BetOnline.ag, and also our other sponsor, Play Action, for this episode too as well. Got some great promotions coming up for the NFL season, so make sure you check it out. Just pulled up a bunch of odds real quick on our Chicago Bears. Super Bowl 66-1, win the NFC 35-1, win the NFC North plus 550, playoffs plus 210, win total 7.5, over is plus 100. Any of those jump out to you? It seems like the win total is probably.
Yeah. I think the win total, I think they'll definitely get over seven wins. I was torn between a 9-8, 8-9. I think that would be a pretty successful season. And especially at 9 wins, they could still potentially make the playoffs, you know, depending on what happens and how teams fare. But I think the biggest thing is if they can split that Green Bay game, I think they can handle business. You know, like we said, with the Vikings and Lions, I think the Green Bay games, just splitting that, you don't have to win both of them. You just can't lose both of them.
Yeah, take care of business and then just pick up, steal one of these two games that we're looking at the schedule. And as Bears fans, we're like, oh, that's a loss. Like, just steal one of those games, Moving on next, Justin Fields, Rookie of the Year odds. Surprisingly, he has the second best Rookie of the Year odds behind Trevor Lawrence, which I found to be very interesting. He's not even starting right now week one, but Vegas knows something that maybe we don't. Anywhere from plus 500 to plus 700, 5 to 1, 7 to 1. That's not bad. That's pretty good.
No, it's not bad. And I'm surprised, like, Zach Wilson hasn't been on there because he's had a really good preseason.
Yeah,
it's kind of surprising. Maybe there's something we don't know about. Maybe they're going to, when the game starts, you know, week one, they're going to say, oh, there's been a last minute change. Maybe that's the case.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't believe in it, but like, dude, like, I pay attention to Vegas. Vegas Bears to make the playoffs is only plus 210. That's a pretty low number. Vegas kind of has this vibe of like Justin Fields maybe taking over and season kind of being flipped on its head a little bit and things getting really exciting on the lakefront. You're totally right about Zach Wilson. Think about all the garbage yards and garbage touchdowns that he's going to rack up losing. I mean, not to be mean, but that's true. They're going to be in games.
Exactly.
He's fourth quarter touchdowns. I think that's a great way to probably put up those stats.
Exactly. So, yeah, I'm just hoping, like you said, you know, Justin Fields comes out there, it gets exciting. They go on a win streak, and then everybody's buzzing about him. He wins Rookie of the Year. They win the playoffs. That, you know, they go all the way to the Super Bowl, and, you know, they win the Super Bowl for the first time since 85. That would be a dream come true in Chicago, and he would be the savior. And then he just continues to get better every season, and then he's a Hall of Famer. They win another two Super Bowls, and then, right? Wouldn't that be great?
I named my son Fields. I named my daughter Justin. Whatever. Who cares?
Justina. You name it. Justina.
Let's move on to Allen Robinson really quick. I found these numbers. Actually, a lot of these Bears numbers are actually really, really, really tasty. Allen Robinson, over 1,075 yards, minus 112. Over 7.5 touchdowns, plus 100. I mean, those are very, very attainable numbers for Allen Robinson. Yeah. I mean, he gets 1,000 yards on the worst off, you know, some of the worst Bears offenses we've seen.
Yeah, I think he goes way above that. You know, I think this year he has a 1,200-1,300 yard season. You know, and you look at the pieces there. Mooney, I mean, he just continues to get better. We still got Jimmy Graham over there. It's a crazy red zone threat. His sure hands over the middle. And then we have Goodwin too. That's the speedster. Deep. So I think run the football early and often. And then Robinson is that guy, and you've seen him the past couple of years. You throw it up and you put it in a ring where only he can get it, he's going to get it, you know, and he's shown that. So I think he'll go over that, and I think he'll get over seven and a half, you said, or seven?
Seven and a half, over seven.
Okay, yeah. Yeah, I think he'll get at least eight, you know, I think for sure. I think he's a guy that just – I'm just hoping they can get the offense worked out, the passing game. I know they're going to get the running game going. I just hope they can not be too cautious in the passing game. You know, maybe early on, but after you start getting the running game, open it up a little bit. You know, whoever's in there, Fields or Dalton, let them throw the football, right? Let them take a chance.
Find somebody. I hope it's Mooney, but it could be Komet or whatever. Find somebody that the other team has to at least keep a half eyeball on, because Allen Robinson, there isn't a blade of grass in the field or a route in the playbook that he can't run.
No.
He's so impressive. He's like Brandon Marshall without the issues. Like I'm such a huge Allen Robinson fan.
Yeah.
We mentioned Darnell Mooney. Again, another one that I like a whole lot. Over under 4.5 touchdowns, over under 700.5 yards. What do you like?
Oh, over both. I think him and Robinson have 1,000 yard seasons, right? I really think that you an extra game as well. I think so. Let me ask you this, right, real quick. So adding another game, do you think that changes the whole dynamic of what a 1,000 yard season rushing or receiving means? Or sack numbers, double digits, or, you know, interceptions, double digits. Do you think that changes that much?
That's a great, great question. In terms of the sacks, I do not think it changes it, because I think, and this is outside of football, there is something arbitrary, subconscious about the number 10. There's something about that double digit number that people can easily wrap their head around. So I think the 10 is always going to be there. But that's a great point, especially with what I think 1,000 yards is still only averaging like 65 rushing yards a game, which really doesn't like light your hair.
Not that much.
Doesn't light your hair on fire, right? But that's a great point in terms of definitely with running backs, I think, moving forward. I think another one that'll be interesting is how we kind of wrap our heads around 25 touchdowns and 30 touchdowns. 30 touchdowns for me was always kind of like this big number of like, you're having yourself a season. This is Pro Bowl. Yeah. This is elite. You're on your way. That's a great call with that extra game. I wonder if that maybe changed a little bit. What do you think?
I think the rushing yards, I think it's still a big deal, 1,000, because it's running back by committee nowadays. It's not like when we were growing up where it was, you know, your Emmitt Smiths, Jerome Bettis's, where they got the ball 40 times a game.
Yeah.
Exactly. So it's usually a running back by committee. And so I think that's more impressive nowadays to get 1,000 yards. Just because that's like what Derrick Henry did in Tennessee. I mean, it's unbelievable. I mean, that's any way you want to talk about it, 2,000 yards in this day and age with the defenses the way they are is impressive. So I think for any running back going over 1,000 this day and age, especially if you're splitting the backfield, that's unbelievable. Like, I think – do you know by any chance who the last two – two-headed 1,000-yard rushers were? Was it Chris Johnson and Lendale White? Or he might have just been just under 1,000 the year he went for.
Oh, wow, that's a great question.
The last two were Lamar Jackson and Mark Ingram, and Lamar Jackson's not even a running back. But before that, right, 2009 was Jonathan Stewart and D'Angelo Williams.
D'Angelo Williams.
That's the last. Yep. Exactly. And before that was Brandon Jacobs and Derek Ward. That's when I think their Super Bowl year. So there hasn't been many. There's only been seven total in the history of the NFL. So
that's hard, and honestly, this changes in terms of your question. I think 2,000 yards changes for me a little bit with the extra game. Because that's like Barry Sanders. That's big time territory for me, and anyone that gets to that mark with that extra game, you're kind of like, well,
yeah, no, it's tough, because you look at back in the day, it was definitely a run first mentality, just the way football has evolved. Now it's becoming more of a passing game, still running the football, but that's why, you know, in some regards I have more respect for a guy like Derrick Henry, because you're like, there's so many different things that a running back does nowadays. It's not just a grinder like him. It's, you know, the catch the ball in the backfield, screens, let me block, let me this. And he's a guy that's an old school type of build, like that's going to give you 40 carries a game and doesn't get injured and can maintain that throughout a whole season and the playoffs, et cetera. So that's what I find super impressive about him is the fact, you know, his durability, you know, for being a guy that's carrying the ball 40 plus times a game.
And to the old football adage, the dude gets stronger as the game goes on.
That's scary.
Carries 28-34 suck for the opposing defense just as much as 1-6. And that's what's really tough about a guy like Derrick Henry.
6'4", 260. I mean, he's a defensive end, tight end. I mean, come on. Him one-on-one in space with a safety or corner, good luck, Chuck. Good luck. Bye-bye. You know, they just try to dive at his legs, or, you know, act like they're trying to tackle him, but they don't want to tackle him. They don't want that smoke.
How fluid your hips are as a cornerback. That's going to be a lot of trouble there. So I think we're also saying – so David Montgomery's over-under for yards is 1,000. It's 1,000.5. So we're feeling pretty good about that over, right?
I feel good about it. Cohen's – we don't know when he's going to come back, right? He's still recovering from the ACL. I think they're going to put all the emphasis on him, and I think they want him to be the long-term back, David Montgomery, for the Bears. I think this is a big year for him, and I think they're going to give him the rock early and often. I think he'll for sure get over 1,000. I think probably around 1,200, you know, with the extra game and all. And like I said, they're going to have to be a run-first team. And if he could have great success, I mean, this could be a really breakout season for him, Pro Bowl caliber type, if they run the ball like I think they should. You know they should. Matt Nagy knows he should. You know, just run the football. Hand him the rock, until you get tired, you know.
I love watching him punish opponents. I got two more for you. One real quick. Jimmy Graham over under 3.5 touchdowns.
Easy money.
I know, right? So
right,
one of my best calls on this pod last year was I think his over under was the same. It was like 3.5 or 4, and I was like, dude, he's gonna get that in September, and then he did. You know what I mean? Like, he's a red monster. I think he could have 12 receptions all year and six of them will be touchdowns, in my opinion.
Yeah. I think that's his bread and butter now. Now that he's kind of slowed down, you know, as he's getting older, he's still an athletic guy, but not what he was early on with the Saints and Seahawks before he hurt his knee. So he kind of knows his role. They know where he fits in. He's going to be that red zone target. And he had eight last year. I think he'll probably go for the same this year. You know, it's going to be a situation where if Montgomery's running the football well, you know, you have those two tight ends in there, hard play action sell. Dump it over the top to 6'7", Jimmy Graham, who can still go up and get it against a safety or linebacker that's, you know, 5'11". He's 6'7". Give him the rock up high.
Maybe we will see that week one when Justin Fields comes in for a little red zone package. Red zone package. We'll see what happens. Here's my final one for you. And honestly, I love the value on this. Khalil Mack, Defensive Player of the Year, 24-1 odds. Slap in the face.
No, I mean,
it's hard to win Defensive Player of the Year. There's a lot of guys out there. Some dudes have, you know, there's going to be a guy that we don't even know about that's going to get 17 sacks, right? Like, and so that happens every year. It's a really interesting value. If you're a Bears fan, you want to throw just a couple dollars on it because it's going to pay off great.
Exactly.
What do you expect from Khalil Mack this year?
I think he'll have a great season, and I think people underestimate you know, when he has eight sacks or nine sacks, they kind of, he didn't have double digits like I wanted him to. But he's all over the place. You know, he's one of those defensive ends that plays the run well. He rushes the passer well. He has those big splash plays where he can, you know, pick up a fumble and take it to the house. Same thing, get an interception. But I think his game now, I don't think he's a guy anymore that's going to get, you know, the 14 and a half sacks like we saw in Oakland. I think he's a guy that's going to be anywhere from 8 to about 12, and that doesn't get you player of the year as a defensive end. It just doesn't, unless you just had some kind of crazy, you know, scoop and score numbers where you're having all these touchdowns or interceptions. I think 12 gets you a Pro Bowl, gets you one of the best defensive ends in the league, but I don't think it gets you defensive player of the year. Like, because every year you see a crazy stat, a guy that gets 12 picks or a defensive end that has 19 and a half sacks or something like that, or a linebacker, you know, that has all these tackles and sacks and all that. But I think he's going to be a guy that everyone knows his value. He's one of the best ends in the league. He's consistent. I just don't think he's that high sack number that everyone thought he was going to be throughout his whole career. You know, I think he's a guy that's steady, gives you the pressures, gives you the sacks and flurries, right? He'll have a game where he has two, then he'll have a couple of weeks where he doesn't, but he'll make other plays in other places.
I don't look at sack totals that much with Khalil Mack. That doesn't really do it for me. I know a lot of people are giving him a hard time for having 9.5 sacks last year. Oh, God forbid.
Yeah.
And for me, it's, yeah, I like that they have to pay extra attention. Maybe they keep a tight end in the box because they got to take care and chip him, slow down a route a little bit. My thing with him is I think he's one of the best dudes that shakes the ball loose out of the quarterback's hands on first contact that I've seen in a long time. So for me personally, if you're saying 8 or 9 sacks, but you're saying 4 forced fumbles, give me that all day.
So you think that's defensive player of the year type stats? Like,
oh no.
Because
24-1, you could throw a couple of dollars down. But man, that's really hard. What would have to happen was the Bears would have to be 15-2, and he'd have to have
15. I think 15. I think 15 is like a number as a defensive end, because you look at like J.J. Watt, right? He's a guy that won, you know, multiple Defensive Player of the Year awards. And he was a guy that had all, you know, double, you know, they would slide protections at him, double team him. He'd still get 18, 19 sacks, 16 sacks as a defensive tackle, what they consider him, even though he was like an end in between. But he was a guy that was all over the place that you're like, we have to give it to him. I mean, he's everywhere. You know, those stats don't lie. And to your point, I agree. The sack numbers don't matter so much in the scheme of things of how good of a player he is in this. But when it comes to those type of awards, they want to see a certain number. And that's what it comes down to, right? Because Jalen Ramsey or this cornerback could have, you know, 5 balls thrown at him all season. But if he doesn't have the interception number, he will never win Defensive Player of the Year, which I think is kind of skewed. It's just based on your stats when it comes to that and not, you know, if teams are scared of you and things like that. So, you know, when it comes to recognition and credit, you know, the players get it, the coaches get it, but the fans just see the numbers and they're like, oh, well, you can't win that because, you know, it's become just a stat contest.
Number 10.
Yeah, it becomes a stat contest. And I think That's the hardest part, because I feel like a guy throughout his career, a defensive end could be like Khalil Mack, right? And you know, maybe not have the sack numbers of a Michael Strahan or Kevin Green, but could arguably be one of the best defensive ends to ever play the game. But people would never do that because they look at numbers, right? They say Bruce Smith, 200, you know, Reggie White, 198 and a half or whatever it is, you know, and that's what they say. Kevin Green, 160. And they look at that and, those are the best defensive ends or, you know, rushers of all time. And yes, they are great. And but there's certain things that stats really don't define. And, you know, you're going to tell me like a guy like Julius Peppers, his sack numbers aren't the same as, you know, Kevin Green, but Kevin Green was a better player than him. I don't buy that. Right. You know, and there's no disrespect to Kevin Green, you know, rest in peace to him, great player, but I'm just talking from a strictly player standpoint, right? Julius Peppers, in my opinion, was a better player than Kevin Green, right? But Kevin Green's sack numbers were more. But sometimes people say, well, you know, they look at the stats and they say, well, he's got to be the third best, right? No.
Well, and on top of that, too, as well, you're talking a little bit about just kind of narrative and how it goes out to like normal casual NFL fans. And I think right now the J.J. Watt of right now is Aaron Donald, where, you know, Aaron Donald, everybody knows how great Aaron Donald is. And I will be the first to say Aaron Donald's great. He's an amazing, amazing football player. But to win Defensive Player of the Year, you almost like need to like double his numbers. You know what I mean? To even kind of put yourself in that area. And that's just kind of how people in perception kind of view players and look at stuff. And it's always going to be kind of maybe Aaron Donald's award to lose more than it is someone's to go out there and win.
So for example, like a guy like Chris Jones a couple of years ago, when he had like 14 and a half sacks for a Kansas City defensive tackle, he wasn't even in the conversation, right? And for a D tackle to have 14 and a half sacks, that's a big deal, you know, but it's just like this. Your name has to be up there. If Chris Jones was like, that was his second year doing it, then he would have been in the conversation. But his first year really breaking out like that. And it's almost like you got to do something like out of your mind, like as a defensive end. Like think about it. Aaron Donald, you know, is having 18, 19 sacks, which is unbelievable. But as a defensive end, it's like you have to do that much more because he's getting doubled. He's this, you know, triple teamed. All the attention's on them. So it's like you have to do something spectacular. You have to have like 12 sacks, 5 interceptions at the end, you know, 20 tackles for loss, and just be all over the place at all times for them to even consider it, you know. And sometimes I don't like the fact that stats matter, but I think not as much as people think, you know, because like we were talking about a guy like Jalen Ramsey, his stats aren't up there, but he's arguably one of the best guys to ever play the game, right? And you know, when you look at like all-time, you know, interception numbers and this, that, and the other, you look at like Deion and all these other guys, because people actually threw at them, you know, they wouldn't throw at them as much, but they actually threw it. If some of these cornerbacks in the league, they don't even go to their side because they know what's going to happen and they don't want to make that mistake. So it's kind of skewed because when you look at all-time greats, the stats are starting to diminish a little bit, you know, when you look at sack numbers, you look at, you know, rushing yards, this, that, and the other, guys aren't playing as long and different things like that. But sometimes I wish they would just look at overall body of work and how you impacted games and over your career as opposed to just strictly stats.
Well, yeah, you could say that about passing yards. That's kind of gotten skewed over time. You know, Peanut Tillman's fumbles, though, you look at that stat like means something.
Exactly.
From a fan's perspective, and I'm a kid who grew up loving statistics and stuff like that, but the way that I kind of looked at it is statistics help you learn the game in the beginning, and in the end, they also help you, as you were mentioning about Kevin Green and Julius Peppers, can give people kind of an insight to look back and compare legacies and generations. But I think what you're getting at is there's a big, fat middle in there. From when you learn a stat to the end of your career, looking back at your stats, there's the middle of like everything that you're talking about, how you played the game, what kind of teams you were on, honestly, what kind of teammate you were, you know, what you did in those moments. You know, you could have maybe only 4 sacks in a season, but what if those 4 sacks came in the most pivotal, amazing moments? You know what I'm saying?
And exactly.
Talking to the guy here that sacked Brett Favre, and, you know, people still connect that to you. You know what I mean? So all that stuff kind of like leads into it a little bit. And it's that big fat middle where I think we're both advocating that fans maybe take a little bit closer look at, instead of worrying about Khalil Mack getting 9.5 sacks instead of 10. You know,
exactly. Like it's a bigger deal. Like once you go underneath that 10 number, it's like, oh no, he didn't have the season that we thought. His stock is going down, but that's not the case. And like I said, I think Khalil Mack's at the stage in his game where he's going to be anywhere from 8 to 12 sacks a year. And that's great. I think that's great. You know, I think he's a guy that can do it all. Like if he was a guy that was strictly just a pass rusher, I would have a problem with that. Right. If he was supposed to be, you know, oh, he's just a pass rusher. He's just that, like, he's just a Dwight Freeney, you know, a guy that just goes off the edge 3 to 4 downs and just runs upfield. He's not worried about playing the run. But Khalil Mack does it all. He's probably one of the most complete defensive ends. You know, they consider him a linebacker, but I think he's a defensive end. I mean, he's got the strength. He's got the speed, plays the run well. There's nothing he can't do out there. He can cover. He's athletic enough. I think he's the most complete defensive lineman in football, I think.
We finished a fantastic episode talking about Khalil Mack. Corey, I think we're ready for the 2021 Chicago Bears season.
I think we're ready, man.
And we were talking about Aaron Donald, too. Listeners, make sure you check out next week's episode because we're going to talk about matchups. We're going to talk about how the Chicago Bears could possibly win in week one. I know. You haven't heard anyone talk about it. We're going to talk about it. We're going to wrap our heads around maybe stealing a game in L.A., a game that I'm very happy that I'm going to be at, too, as well. Today's episode of Believe in Bears was brought to you by BetOnline.ag. 100% welcome bonus on your first deposit. How do you say no? And also Play Action. They've got some amazing, amazing deals and some great office pools to help you set up and enjoy the football season all day, all year long. And Balance 7 pH supplement. Great products going through the Believe Podcast Network right now. Make sure you check all of them out. Corey, my man, we're here. We've done a little preseason here, but now it's time to like put it on, and now it's time to make it real.
Yeah, man, I'm excited about it. You know, it's game week next week. You know, everything hits a little different. You know, the coffee, the pre-workout, you know, biceps are a little different on game week. So I'm excited for it. Like Joey said, we're going to break it down. We're going to preview. We're going to look at the matchups. We're going to look at how the Bears could shock the world week one.
Yes.
Beating the Rams, right? Joey's going to be there, all hands on deck in his Bears jersey. People are going to be yelling, cursing at him, whatever. But he's gonna witness. We're gonna show you how they could possibly win this game. So tune in next week. You know, let us know what you guys think of the podcast, comments, concerns, etc. Let us know, and appreciate you guys' support.
Yeah, thank you so much for listening. Listenership has definitely been up over the last month, and we can't thank you guys enough for coming in to tune in. And hope you come back, Corey. Before you go, throw out your socials, all that good way for people to contact you.
Yep, you can find me on Twitter, Instagram at Corey Wooten, CoreyWTOs, 2 T's, O-N, just so you don't get it twisted. And then you can find me on Facebook as well, but that's a little bit more personal, you know, family photos, Corey Wooten as well. But yeah, like I said, like, comment, share, let us know what you think. We love your feedback.
We love having the girl dad here on the pod this week. Second week of school, my friend. You can find me, Joey Christopoulos, on Twitter, Instagram at Joey Sports Guy. Thank you so much for listening to this pod. Everyone, be safe, be well. Please be good to each other. We're going to see you next week for Bears Rams. Corey, what else can I say? Bear down, man.
Bear down and drop some bombs on the golf course, my man.
I'm ready.